This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Jay-Z, Reasonable Doubt. Well, let's see what it says on allmusic.com. It says, before Jay-Z fashioned himself into hip-hop's most notorious capitalist, he was a street hustler from the projects who rapped about what he knew and was very, very good at it. Skeptics who've never cared for Jigga's crossover efforts should turn to his debut, Reasonable Doubt, as the deserving source of his legend. Reasonable Doubt is often compared to another New York landmark, Nas's Illmatic. A hungry young MC with a substantial underground buzz drops an instant classic of a debut, detailing his experiences on the streets with disarming honesty and writing some of the most acrobatic rhymes heard in quite some time. Plus, neither artist has since approached the street cred of his debut, the blueprint notwithstanding. Parts of the persona that Jay-Z would ride the superstardom are already in place. He's cocky, bordering on arrogant, but playful and witty, and exudes effortless, unaffected cool throughout. And even if he's rapping about rising to the top instead of being there, his material obsessions are already apparent. Jay-Z the hustler isn't too different from Jay-Z the rapper. Hustling is about living the high life and getting everything you can, not violence or tortured glamour or cheap thrills. In that sense, the album's defining cut might not be one of the better-known singles, Can't Knock the Hustle, Dead Presidents 2, and Feeling It, for the Foxy Brown debut. It just might be the brief 22 twos, which not only demonstrates Jay-Z's extraordinary talent as a pure freestyle rapper, but also preaches a subtle message through its club hostess. Bad behavior gets in the way of making money. Perhaps that's why Jay-Z waxes reflective, not enthusiastic about the darker side of the streets. Songs like Devils and Regrets are some of the most personal and philosophical he's ever recorded. It's that depth that helps Reasonable Doubt rank as one of the finest albums of New York's hip-hop renaissance of the 90s. Alright, so this was released on June 25th, 1996. The genres are East Coast hip-hop, mafioso rap, and came out on Rockefeller Records, as well as Priority Records, and was produced by Jay-Z, Damon Dash, Kareem Biggs Burke, Big Jazz, Clark Kent, DJ Irv, DJ Premier, Nobody, Peter Panic, Ski, and K-Rob.
That's a lot of producers.
There's a lot of producers, yeah. And so there are 14 tracks on the album, and because it came out in the 90s, the primary format was CD, so there's really no side one or side two. We will listen to the first 7 songs and stop halfway through and discuss the album at the halfway point. And so if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, we've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music in the show notes. So we'll start. The album starts with Can't Knock the Hustle, and we'll stop it at 22 twos to discuss the halfway point. And so, yeah, so without further ado, here is the first song on the album, Can't Knock the Hustle, with Mary J. Blige. Here we go. Oh. Okay, and ending the first half of the album with 22 twos. Yeah, I don't hate this as much as I thought I would.
And so, oh, yeah?
Still okay. Not a huge fan of it.
Yeah, it's not really for me, but...
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it for me, I'm just... Like, I like the music tracks. Like, the music of it is okay. Like, I think that's what I like. But I think, and to be honest, like, I don't... He's rapping about things that I just don't know about. Like, I don't really know what it's like to be on the streets in New York. And I know a lot of people listen to it and didn't necessarily come from that world, but I'm struggling to sort of, and I do hear rap that I about that stuff that I do connect with, but it's almost like he's sort of disconnected from it in a way. Like, I'm not quite feeling it from him.
No, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of listening to someone brag about themselves and like to, at the best of times. So that wasn't all he was doing. So I give him credit there, but he did do that.
He did do that. Yeah. What's that? The first song, Can't Knock the Hustle.
It's just, yeah, it just doesn't do it for me. But, yeah, the musical side of things is, it's fine, I guess. It's, again, there's nothing really special about it to my ear, but, you know, I'm really trying to listen for, like, you know, interesting samples or just, like, interesting ways of using a sample or something like that, or...
Yeah, and they are using samples here, but it's done sort of more subtly, I think. Yeah, a lot of the piano is taken from a lot of jazz recordings, which is good, which is fine, but I don't think you're going to hear a lot of familiar pop songs. I like, there is a lot of rap that I do like, and I know you're not a huge rap fan, although there has been some stuff that we've listened to that's been pretty good, like the Fugees. That was a really good album.
Yeah, that wasn't bad at all.
You know, and I think I do like Notorious B.I.G., who's featured on one of the tracks here. But I don't know. I've never really like. I'm not a rap aficionado or anything like that. But Jay-Z to me has never. Like, of the rap that I hear and that is, oh, yeah, that's, like, I can recognize that's a good song and I like that. Jay-Z has always been one of the ones that I never quite... He's never really had any memorable impact on me as far as the hip-hop that I listen to. And I think it is part of it. Like, part of it is that sort of... bragging about himself and I think the quote is attributed to him, and I think it's in one of his songs, is I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman. I think that's Jay-Z, and it's kind of
funny, but
it's a clever line, yeah, for sure, but it's kind of cringy at the same time. It's like,
yeah,
kind of gross, you know, because it seems to be all about, like, a lot of rap and hip-hop is poetry, and it's you know, talking about what's going on in your life, and that's the stuff that I really like, but with him it's always been about hustling and trying to make as much money as I can, and, you know, getting like that, all that kind of, I don't know. It's hard to
for rich.
Yeah. It's sort of like, yeah, it's hard to really, it's hard for me to connect with that on an emotional level.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. He was always one of the rappers that it's like, Yeah, I don't, I can't really connect with this guy. Like, he's not really doing it for me, you know? Yeah.
I'm sort of in the same boat, because, you know, I'm trying to, I mean, I'm waiting for, you know, like maybe like a cutting political take or something like that. At least one I can actually sort of understand, because I think he touched on a couple of things sometimes, but they seemed almost in passing and just like a vague reference to something and then goes back to something that I can't connect with. I might be missing something. I don't know. But I'm waiting for him to, like, you know, what Bob Dylan said to the Beatles. It's like, say something, man.
Yeah, you're right. Like, he started to say something on, like, Dead's, like, two songs that should be political, like Politics as Usual and Dead Presidents. Like, you know, the titles are right there.
It's something like I heard in Devils or D apostrophe Evils. Like, there was a little bit of a hint towards that as well. But again, it wasn't a total.
It was non-committal.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, starting to say something, then kind of backed away from it. Yeah, it's hard to say, because he kind of, and I don't know like if he's like, I don't really. That's part of it too. Is like I'm finding it hard to grasp sort of what the songs are about and what he's trying to convey. Because, yeah, it kind of seems jumbled and sort of all over the place. But then again, I don't know if I'm just not picking up on what he's saying. Or, like, if he's, you know, if it's not clear.
I know I'm not the target audience. So, again, that's fine. I'm not trying to put him down for that thing. I'm just trying to put him, you know, put him into context as to context I can sort of grasp, and I'm having a hard time doing it.
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny, is this was sort of mostly considered his best album. There is so the critical reception at the, like, it was met with pretty universal praise from most people. And I think maybe at the time, like, hip-hop was in a weird state in the 90s. It was sort of going through an identity crisis. You know, you'd had sort of the old school.
I mean, it can be cutting sometimes too, but for the most part, it was a little more fun. It didn't take itself so seriously.
And I think that's part of why, like, the I did read somewhere that this album, like, apparently in his, in the albums that he released after this, he was more, this is his least poppy record. Like, this is his most sort of straight ahead. Like, there isn't a lot of hooks here. There isn't a lot of, like, the samples are like very subtle and mostly like
more of a
piano
straight ahead rap.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I can respect.
In retrospect, it has sort of become considered his best album because of that, because it doesn't have, like, it's the most sort of raw in, I guess, even though it's hard to connect with it, this is sort of considered his best album.
But he sort of caught the commercial bug, I guess, which I guess is sort of what he's rapping about in this, at least the first song.
Yeah,
sure.
Sort of wanting to get to that point. Yeah, so
and
it's
when
not
he got to that point, he's making all this money.
Yeah, so because you can't really you can't really call him a sellout because he's sort of always aspired to that. So, but like this is sort of maybe sort of like the debut album, and it's sort of like, oh, just sort of getting his feet wet type of thing. But yeah, it's here it is. Yeah, Reasonable Doubt has often been considered by many fans to be Jay-Z's best record. According to Birchmeyer, it differed from his subsequent albums by lacking pop crossover songs and hits. So there isn't a, like, this isn't, although it was, like, critically acclaimed, it didn't really catch on with a lot of fans. Like, a lot of people didn't, like, people went back and listened to it after he had some hits, and it's like, oh, this is...
Gotcha. You know. Yeah. That's, that happens a lot. Where our first album, it's sort of, I won't say it did nothing, but where it kind of, you know, hides underground for a little bit until something boosts.
I know we sort of like to think about, like, if this album were to come out today, like, what would it have any impact? I don't know. I don't think so. I think the music landscape has changed so much, and hip hop doesn't even sound like this anymore.
No, it's hard for me to say, as someone who's not a rap aficionado, to say for sure if this thing would do anything. But I do know that rap being in the spotlight since, you know, the early 90s and basically transformed what pop music is for the past 3.5 decades, maybe 4 if you go to like the mid 80s or something like that, it started to have influence in places, even early 80s. It's influenced so much, so it's evolved so much, that this probably sounds very dated. I mean, it doesn't sound too dated to me, because I know I listen to stuff from long before this. Yeah. And I love it. A lot of stuff that came out in the 90s has almost like a timeless sort of feel to it, but only recently has it started to date itself. It seemed so present for such a long time, where you could put on an album from like 1994 or something like that and play it, and it sounds as fresh as anything. Now you put it on, and now you start to recognize, you know, the production qualities and the little tropes and things like that that were very prevalent at that time. And I'm noticing that a little bit with this one, but there are little bits into there, and I'm not disparaging it for that. In fact, sometimes I like a little bit of a trace to recognize when something is from. I think that's actually kind of fun.
A lot of other styles of music can have a timeless feel, you know, but I think because hip hop is so like, it's talking about what's happening now, it kind of sets itself up to not be timeless. It's sort of like watching an old news broadcast rather than getting lost in an older TV show.
That is, stuff that's a little bit more political has a tendency to do that, unless it's like a timeless problem, like with Rage Against the Machine, where they are oddly enough timeless, even though they are as political as they are. But I know what you mean. Whereas, you know, if they're talking about a specific, you know, thing going on at that time, it's a snapshot of that period. But it's sometimes a little bit hard to put it up against something else of, you know, the time we're in now, and it's just the juxtaposition is, you know, there's a gap there.
So I did manage to find a few facts about the album. Not a whole lot, but I did manage to find two. This took... Like I was saying, people coming back to this album after Jay-Z sort of got more famous. This actually, the album took 6 years before it was certified platinum. So it came out in 96 and wasn't certified platinum until 2002.
Well, obviously it was timeless enough over that, you know, 6 year period. And I can sort of see that. Yeah, it would age pretty well in that timeline, especially up to the early 2000s when, you know, especially gangster rap and stuff like Jay-Z and just was front and center everywhere. That's where the Escalade with the donk wheels and the scantily clad ladies, checking for moles on their music videos came from. And, it's just, I can sort of, this, maybe that's partly what I find a little bit off-putting about this album is probably just because of it just seems to be of that culture, and I have a hard time with that. That culture never appealed to me. But I'm really trying to pick out things that I, do like about it. So, but I'm having a little bit of trouble.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
The other thing is that I thought this was kind of cool, actually, is he was rejected from every record company that he submitted a demo to. So he actually started his own label, Rockefeller Records, and put this out on that label. It was started by him and a few of his friends to basically just to put out this album, which is actually, that's not unheard of. I think Joan Jett did that.
Yeah. It's still on the early side of, independent, labels and stuff like that. There's always been small labels, but yeah, independent labels have always been very few and far between until about the mid-2000s, where they just exploded.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting that, he had that much gumption to say no. It's like, I'm not going to rely on, all the big record labels. I'm going to start my own label. And I kind of admire the not giving up part of it.
This is something that actually works in his favor, even in my eyes and stuff like that, is he is the artist, and the artist generally has a vision, and I guess he was right about his vision. And, him putting that out on his own because, all the record labels didn't get it at first. It's totally a legit move. It was that's something I can actually really respect.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Joan Jett did the same thing when she broke off of the Runaways. Basically the same story. So it's not totally unheard of, but it's not very common that an artist will start their own label so they can put their music out.
I mean, CDs made it a little bit easier, but it wasn't until the MP3 that really allowed people to sit in their bedrooms and make records on a massive scale. And good records. They're not all crap. I mean, sure, SoundCloud is full of weird shit, but there's some good stuff on there too. And I'm not talking about just SoundCloud. There's little independent labels that, released really good stuff that actually made waves in the, the indie music business or scene or whatever you want to call it. And it's hard to call it a scene because, again, it was so widespread.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the fact that he did this at a time before that, and Joan Jett also doing that, and Joan Jett's doing it while she had to find someone who was willing to press records. JC had to find someone who was willing to, burn CDs. you know, before people could burn CDs on their own computers, really. Good grief, the internet was only a couple of years old, you know, as far as, you know, the public was concerned.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like 3 or 4 years old. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, that's pretty, pretty cool that he was able to do that. But yeah, anyway, I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album. But before we do, we'll hear from our friend Jess over at Music Notes with Jess. So check that out.
Hi, I'm Jessica Ann Katina. I've always loved music and surround myself with it every day. I've sung in choirs, took digital musical classes in college, and used to work in radio. To further share my knowledge and experience with others, I created this podcast, Music Notes with Jess, in 2019. I'm so fortunate of the listener growth and hearing back from some of the celebs I discussed in past episodes. That's why now I'm ready to expand. So let's have fun taking weekly music notes of throwbacks, modern hits, and media. Thank you. Talk to you soon on Music Notes with Jess.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Okay, and ending the album with Regrets. Yeah, I don't think I feel any differently having listened to the second half of the album.
I thought there was a couple tracks that I thought were actually not too bad. I guess I'll pick those when we get to there. But I overall, I thought the second half was a little bit livelier.
A lot of the first half was, the music was like this sort of beat with like a distant piano. And you're right, the music in the second half was a lot more, a lot warmer, I guess.
Yeah, it just seemed a little bit more, I use this term a lot, but experimental. Like, he was actually sort of having fun with it, as opposed to just, you know, finding a track and rapping over it. This was a little bit more, I don't know, it comes off as if it's a little more involved anyway.
Yeah, I think I agree. I still had a hard time connecting with it, though. I think overall, this isn't a, it's not a terrible album. I mean, it's still, like you were saying before, he still has an artistic vision, and he was able to execute that. And, you know, that's the thing with art. It's completely subjective. I mean, everything, that's what we're doing in this podcast. We're giving our opinion on these albums. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we've had a few albums where it's like, you know what, this isn't for me. I remember Eric's Trip was kind of like that. And so, yeah, I think I'm kind of feeling the same way. Like, this isn't, I know, I respect what he's doing. I respect the craft, I respect the art, but this particular piece of art just isn't for me. It's just not, you know, it's not something that, you know, and, you know, I'm not saying he shouldn't continue to make his art. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just, you know, you can't please everyone, and but at the same time, not everything is going to please you. So, and that's okay. You know, there's something for everybody, for the people, there's something for everybody, and for the artist, your art is going to resonate with someone. It doesn't have to resonate with everyone.
I did find myself enjoying the second half a little bit better, though. It was interesting. Like, I'm still, it's not really my thing, but there were things that alluded to my thing a little bit in there. A few tracks kind of did that, and I, depending on the track, some of them were, you know, I respected something you know, things that he was saying a little bit better too.
Yeah, no, there was some of the samples from the second half, like he's sampling from a lot of cool, like soul music. Like there's one that was sampled from the Four Tops. Where was it? Isaac Hayes. You know, so he's, so in the second half, he's sampling from some more interesting and livelier performances. Whereas, yeah, the first half was a little more subdued, I guess. So I guess we've come to the point where we have to pick our three favorite songs.
I think I've actually picked my three favorites, but I'm curious to know how difficult this was for you.
Okay, well, it is difficult. I really like that last song, Regrets. I think I would pick that. I think I would go with Friend or Foe. And I actually did kind of like Dead Presidents. I think I would go with those three. Yeah.
All of mine are in the last half, and you picked two of mine. Regrets, Friend or Foe, and Can I Live, actually. I think those are the ones. I was actually kind of impressed with Can I Live, and it was funny. We just had gotten off of talking about how this really was sort of lackluster, and then suddenly that song started up, and it actually jolted me a little bit. I'm like, okay, this is a little bit, you know, this is actually pretty good. So, yeah, those are my three.
Okay. So that's an interesting segue. Would you listen to it again then?
Oh, as an album, probably not. But I would say that there's a few songs that are probably worth listening to again. That are, I think, worth it. Those three songs that I think I picked, yeah, I wouldn't complain if they came on again. I don't know if I'd seek it out necessarily. That's the other thing. So I can't say I'd listen to it because it's just not, I'm not the intended audience. It's not for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I think, yeah, I don't think I would listen to it again. The few songs that I did like wouldn't, like I said, wouldn't be opposed to listening to them again if they came on. But yeah, I'm probably not going to put the album on again. I think I pretty much feel the same as you. But yeah, I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. If you did enjoy the show, just don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And we'd love to hear from you if you want to leave a rating and review from whatever podcast platform you're listening on. And it really helps listeners find the show. And if you'd like to support the show, you can get these episodes a day before they go live. And lots of cool stuff. You can help us out on our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And you can also check out the website. Go to polyphonicpress.com for more info and updates and lots of cool stuff there. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.